Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning into Paranormal Talk Radio. This is not the X-Files. We are not scientists. We are not mathematicians. We are certainly not school teachers. We are no experts. We are paranormal investigators who have come together to give our audience insight and educational subjects about the paranormal field. Join us live every Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Without further delay, here are your hosts, Matthew J. Haas, and his partner in crime, Tim Vickers.
Wow, well, we definitely had an explosion tonight, folks. sorry about the audio quality. I'm not sure how it's going to be tonight, but we had to do it by phone. Looks like Blog Talk may be having some little bit of technical difficulties, but other than that, I'm ready to go, and Tim's ready to go. Welcome to Paranormal Talk Radio. Tim, how you doing? Uh-oh, I lost Tim. All right, gonna have to recall him into our show, and I don't know. Bear with us, folks, as I get all this worked out. Tim, are you there? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, great. For some reason, I put you on hold automatically when the show started. Oh,
it's,
man.
Like any other company I call, man, they put me on hold.
We're always on hold forever, no matter who you call.
That's insane, brother.
Yeah, well, we have to do it this way, and you know, I apologize to the audience, but we had some glitches with Blog Talk Radio. I don't know why. I'll figure it out as we go along, but hopefully everybody can hear us okay, and you know, so far it won't be as bad as I hope it's not. So Tim, how are you?
Good, sir.
All right, great. Thank you for filling in for me last week. We had Mike Diamond fill in and help us out, and I want to publicly thank him, you know, for being on our show. He was a great guest. You guys did a great job. I listened to the episode, and you guys had a lot of good conversation and, you know, stuff about moving forward. I know he's got a big project in the works with that. He's looking for funding because it's for serious researchers that really want to make a difference in the paranormal community. I think it's a great project, and it's a positive thing. And who wouldn't want to contribute to a positive thing?
Yeah, when you can be part of it, too.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone can participate. And if you want to share a video or, you know, say a little something about it, I'm sure Mike won't mind that. Go to ParanormalWarehouse.com. They got some info on there. You can also hit him up on Facebook. You know, look him up. Michael James, I believe, is his Facebook. And I don't know, but I think you would probably prefer, you know, his contact info on ParanormalWarehouse.com. Very approachable. You can contact him about anything. And he's willing to help out. So he's a great guy and a good friend. So anyway, Tim, we have some great topics tonight. Mm-hmm. We're also going to bring back our paranormal news segment. For a while there, we stopped doing it for some reason. I don't know why, but I guess we got caught up in having guests and all different kinds of, you know, great subjects that we've been talking about. And we kind of forgot to report the news a little bit.
Well, you know, we had Mike do that for so long, and he's so good at it. When we changed dates and he couldn't join us, we kind of fell out of it, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. But I know, you got something for us tonight. But before we go ahead and start the news, want to let our audience know what we're going to talk about later on tonight. We have some great topics. I think a lot of people enjoy these subjects. We're going to talk about the Fox Sisters and the beginning of the spiritual movement and the first ghost encounters in history. I found a lot of cool things, you know, that go back in history as far as, like, you know, the first ever ghost encounters that were ever recorded. I have some articles and stuff I can read later on, and I think it'll be really cool to listen to that. I'll do my best to read them. It's pretty long, but I'll try to keep a brief description of you know, what we have. But one of the questions one of the questions I have on my mind is, and I'm sure a lot of paranormal investigators and ghost hunters say this, why don't we see ghosts of cavemen?
Well, yeah, we've had that discussion before. There's a lot of ghosts that we don't see that are allegedly out there. You know how that goes.
Yeah. How come we don't see ghosts of dinosaurs?
I would absolutely die if I got chased by a ghost of a velociraptor. That would just be a nightmare. Thanks. I'm going to have nightmares about that tonight now.
Well, you can thank me for that.
Yeah.
So, well, speaking of news, I guess we'll roll with the punches and we'll go on with the show. Tim, what do you got for us? I know you have an interesting topic you want to bring up. So I know you've been excited about it all week, because it's actually a hot topic, because it's been all over social media. So go ahead and take the reins, if you will.
Well, what I kind of came across was another one. You can bring up that, but I saw this earlier today. It was posted today, July 31st, by Blake Smith with skeptic.com. And it's concerning the Goddard Squadron photo. And I don't know if you're familiar with that, but this is an old photo, early 1900s. It's from a Royal Air Force squadron that all took a class, not a class, but a group photo. And apparently, or allegedly, a guy by the name of Freddie Jackson, who had supposedly died a few days before, shows up in this picture. A couple things that I like about this, I want to share why it kind of got my attention, was because earlier, published in February of 2015, the same author put out that he could not find information about anybody with the name Frederick Jackson that was in that Air Force. Therefore, saying he can't find it, he can't even substantiate that this guy even existed, so how could this guy be in this picture as claimed? Well, he came out and said that he was contacted by another person that actually sent him the registration or in the form a Frederick George Jackson that was in the Royal Air Force. And he came out and said, and this is just what I love about when you have a really good skeptic, is let me read this. He says, I'm no scientist. I wish I were, but at the end of the day, I'm merely an enthusiast who tries to use scientific methodology in my daily life. One aspect of science which I'm keenly aware of is that it is self-correcting. When evidence appears which is contrary to the hypothesis of one being tested, which his was that he never existed, science demands that the new evidence be accounted for, and then if that evidence is sound, the hypothesis must be amended or discarded. So he's coming out and he's basically saying, hey, I got the first one wrong. Evidence came forward that, yes, there was a person by the name of Frederick Jackson that was in the Royal Air Force. So allegedly what had happened was a few days before this picture was taken, taken that this guy, Freddie Jackson, into a an airplane propeller and had died on the spot where this picture was taken immediately.
That must have hurt.
Instantaneous. Yeah, well, you know, and so this was this person's recollection of this. That was the story. But also with the information that came forward, which was the death record of one Frederick George Jackson, it gave his registry number for the records, which is awesome. It also gave where he passed away at. And he passed away at the Third Northern General Hospital in Sheffield, which, curiously enough, is 225 miles away from the base. So, while that did give good information that he was wrong, that there was this person named Freddie that was in this regiment or this company of pilots, even though he was an airplane mechanic, the stories were wrong. The recollection from a Sir Victor Goddard said, and I'm going to quote from the article. It says, well, there he was, and make no mistake, although a little fainter than the rest, indeed he looked as though he was not altogether there, not really with the group, for he was alone, capless, smiling, and the rest of us were serious and set, wearing service caps. Most had not long returned from church parade and military marching in the military funeral for Freddie Jackson had, upon that very spot, the squadron tarmac 3 days before walked heedlessly into a whirling propeller of an aeroplane. He had been killed stone dead instantly. He evidently was not aware of it. So we have two conflicting stories. You have medical record of his death 225 miles away from this story. And so I think it's pretty interesting that what this person is kind of starting to think about was they might have false memory, which is very common. And, you know, and Kenny's a great big fan of that. And I am too, but here's what, you know, was the picture taken when they thought the picture was taken? That's the question now. How can you make sure that that picture was taken 3 days after the alleged event? And what about this person that ended up 225 miles away from where he allegedly died? I would imagine if you walked headfirst into a spinning propeller of an airplane, you won't last very long, much less to travel 225 miles to a hospital for treatment.
It would have to be a super fast running propeller to shoot his body 200 miles across where he was.
Yeah, but it came out today, and it fascinated me on several levels. One, you're starting to get historical records and documents that are beginning to bring this famous picture into question. I mean, prior to this, all you had was a he said, she said kind of story. And you know how those stories go. It's not a whole lot of factual evidence there other than anecdotal statement from someone. But with the finding of the medical records of his death, placing him 225 miles away from where he allegedly died. I don't know what else you can say other than that brings up serious questions about the story that's being told. The other thing that I like about it is that you have an author of a publication here that says, hey guys, I got this wrong. Not only did I get it wrong, but I'm going to come back out and put something on record saying I got it wrong. And this is the evidence showing why I have to rethink what I said in February. I think that's really cool. I think that's really classy.
Yeah, that's classy. And, you know, that's kind of respectable that a person can come forward about making a mistake and not many people, let's face it, there's a lot of people in our paranormal community that don't know how to do that. And, instead of saying, I don't know, or, I made a mistake, or learning, appropriately, the facts and looking up, all that research, like what they did with this article. I mean, I wish there was more people like that person.
I agree. And I don't think that, I think that's an excellent example to follow, and to set forth, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to link this into the comment section so people can click on it. And I believe once they see the picture is really well known. I've seen the picture several times.
It's actually the story of one of the first, well, maybe not the first in history, but that I've come across of a skeptic that actually admitted they were wrong.
Well, they're not a skeptic if they don't admit that they're wrong.
Yeah, that's true. But that was a really cool article, Tim. Glad you kind of found that. And it kind of ties in with our topic a little bit, because it's something that's historic also. So, I feel bad that he died from running into a, propeller of an airplane.
That's one the story, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's one way to go out if that actually happened. So...
Oh, yeah, that's the scene in, what was the scene in the movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark? It's a brilliant scene that ended.
Yeah, that's funny. But, we had an interesting week. We had a church, I believe, Tim, what was the church in I can't remember now. Having a brain fart moment.
It happens.
Yeah, it happens. I'm going to grab the article right now because I have a lot of windows open on my laptop, so bear with me. I got to try to find where I have it bookmarked. So.
Well, I made that link. I hope that link works for everybody. I tested it. It worked on mine, but. Blog Talk's been a little difficult this evening.
Here we go. Detroit. I knew it was somewhere in that area, but I didn't want to say somewhere in the Midwest and be wrong. But all right. So this is like a big thing. This is my part of the news, by the way.
Rushing to work all those years.
Okay, we don't need that playing in the background. I hate those stupid advertisements.
This show is so haunted, man. It's so haunted. There's demons running everywhere. There's demons in my phone. There's demons at Blog Talk. This is proof, man. This is proof. There's no other explanation.
Uh-oh. And I'm losing the chat room. I don't know why.
All yeah, I got kicked things. Out, too.
Why are we being kicked out? This is weird. Yeah, I'm going to blame it on demons.
It's haunted. Blame it on demons. I mean, if we all pray about it, they'll go away.
All right. So if everybody who's joined us in the chat room that's listening to our show, I've restarted the chat room, so if you got booted out, you can log back in. I restarted it up, so it looks like everybody's still there, but just in case you got booted off. Anyway, so there's this article. It says that Satan statue is unveiled in Detroit during largest public satanic ceremony in history. So that's a big deal.
Yeah, that is a big deal.
They I'm gonna as soon as I get rid of this stupid advertisement that keeps popping up. All right, here we go. It says members of the Satanic Temple unveiled a satanic monument in Detroit on July 25th in an attempt to make a statement against religious statues on government property. According to the Christian Science Monitor, the 9-foot-tall bronze goat-headed winged statue of Baphomet, if I pronounce that correctly, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, sorry, was unveiled during a ticketed in an industrial complex close to the Detroit River. CBS Detroit reported that the event was billed as the largest public satanic ceremony in history. Wow. The statue made its first public appearance as hundreds of attendees sang Hail Satan. Although members of the group celebrated the statue's unveiling, a group of 100 protesters arrived just before the event to pray and call the monument disrespectful towards other religions, the CS Monitor reported. Todd Sanders, a minister for Strictly Biblical Bible Teaching Ministries in Detroit, told CBS Detroit the unveiling was a great opportunity for the church. The church can benefit from this because we can view this as an opportunity to get at the truth in terms of what the Satanic Temple believes, the minister said. I don't think it's anything we should be afraid of at all. We don't need to cower in fear. We have the truth on our side as Christians. I wouldn't say that's very Christian-like, though. there's a little bit more here. I guess we'll finish this up, and then Tim, we can comment away. But Jex Blackmore, the director of the Satanic Temple of Detroit, told reporters that the protests are a product of deep misunderstanding about Satanism. Blackmore explained that this group is non-theist and does not follow the Judeo-Christian representation of Satan. The Satanic Temple of Detroit defines Satan as a symbol of a man's inherent nature, representative of eternal rebel, enlightened inquiry, and personal freedom rather than a supernatural deity or being. Wow, that's a lot to swallow.
Yeah. Well, you know, paranormal kind of stuff, I don't necessarily know. You know, this is kind of a religion thing, and it sounds more political. I don't know if I buy into the whole Satan and however it goes, but you know, without getting too political and way off topic, you know, this strikes me as a political statement. You know, it seems like I remember reading something about this also being one of the things that they want to do with this is eventually have a statue, and I believe it's in Arkansas, where they want to place a statue. I don't know if it's like that one or similar to that one, but they would like to have one at a courthouse where a community refuses to remove the Ten Commandments. So I kind of think they're saying, hey, if we're going to have religious freedom, then religious freedom for everyone, and religious freedom for whatever religion you so choose to dedicate your life to. That's where I think that they're going. I certainly don't know anything about that religion. I don't know anything about, you know, whatever the satanic group of Detroit or Michigan. But it just sounds like it's a lot of political statement to me.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know much about that particular religion either, but you know, based on what I grew up knowing, when I went to church and my family and friends, you know, all their religion and, you know, Satanism, we always portray it as being something very negative or evil, and was something that, you know, that we stay away from. And I don't know, that the whole Satanism thing is just, I don't know, it's a weird religion. So, you know, yeah, not that it has anything to do with paranormal, but, you know, in a way it involves with spiritualism. And, you know, it's a big topic out on social networks. So that's why I thought I'd bring it up. I thought it'd be an interesting read and, you know, see what some of our listeners' thoughts are. So if you guys have any thoughts towards that article, you guys want to call in, hopefully you guys can call in. But our number is 646-787-8160. If you want to call in, it's free to call in. You know, give us your thoughts on that. And, you know, we'd be glad to take a listen to your opinion. You know, we try to encourage our listeners to call in, you know.
Yeah, well, I find it interesting. I don't know how many times anybody else has come to this or has experienced something similar, but a long time ago, not so much now, but earlier on when I was doing, you know, ghost hunting and paranormal investigations, and I used to be warned from friends that, you know, that what I was doing was messing with the devil, messing with Satan, and doing different, you know, flirting with the devil, for lack of a better word. And you know, I always found that interesting. I mean, I kind of see that as from that aspect of that religion, you know, and I believe they were concerned, honestly concerned and genuinely concerned for my safety, which is, you know, which is nice. But I kind of see the connection there, where people look at, I think people people who look for ghosts sometimes think that they are messing with things that they ought not be messed with.
Right. Yeah. I know what you mean. There's a lot of like religious folks, that think what we do is taboo, and, we shouldn't be communicating with them because they think they're demons or something evil. And, I don't know, in my opinion, you know, if that was the case, I don't think we'd be communicating or I don't know, be allowed to do something like that at all, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I don't think that we're communicating. I have nothing to go on that we're communicating with anything. You know, some things kind of just blow my mind, and I can't explain, and it's fun to think about and ponder on, you know, a couple pieces of evidence or data that I've collected still puts my mind to this day. But, you know, I don't know what we're dealing with, what we think that we're dealing with to date has anything to do other than with just something that we don't understand yet. And I kind of think historically speaking, things that people don't understand typically are scary. It doesn't necessarily have to be physical scary or demonic scary. I mean, it could be any type of unknown or change, something new. Fear of change is a very valid fear.
And fear of the unknown is not really paranormal. It's normal.
Yeah, but exactly, but I think that is still applicable to people not understanding what's going on when they have what they believe is a paranormal experience. And, you know, I always kind of come back to, you know, at some times when you don't have an explanation for something, the best that you got in the worldview that you live in, and if it happens to be of one particular faith, not saying that that's, you know, a good thing or a bad thing, you know, I'm not judging any faith at all. I don't want to do that. I'm just saying, when you don't understand something like that, it has a tendency to go to a higher power. You know, the responsibility of this lies upon a higher power. There's there's a message in it, or there's conflict in it, or there's a trial to be learned from it, or it's just meant to be feared, or it's just meant to not be questioned, and you know, you should never question, and so you just have to kind of let it go.
So, yeah, that was a quite intense conversation. But we probably opened up a can of worms there. We'll probably get like flooded emails of hate mail of, you know, from religious fanatics. And but I didn't mean to step on it.
I'm not saying, just want to say, I'm not saying good or bad, right or wrong. I'm not making any judgment on it. Just looking at what I think might be seen as a historical pattern of how to explain things that people don't know how to explain at the time. I don't think that lessens any understanding or faith in whatever religion or practice that people subscribe to. I think that it's just a byproduct of people's coping mechanism when they are dealt with something that they don't understand. It's the best they got with the education that they have and the times they're living in. Did I lose you?
No, I'm here. I'm sorry.
I did?
No, that's I'm okay. Here. Everything's kind of related to our topics tonight. And I have some really cool articles, Tim, that I want to get into because I think they're really fascinating. But our topics tonight are the beginning of the spiritual movement, which obviously entails partly of the Fox Sisters. We're also going to talk about the very first ghost encounters in history. And there's some really great things there that I think everybody will enjoy listening to. Now, the Fox Sisters, in my opinion, I think the spiritual movement, Tim, has always been there, even before the Fox Sisters. We had famous ancestors, inventors that were before that time involved with, experimenting with talking to the dead. Albert Einstein, Thomas Edison, Nikola Tesla. There's a bunch of famous inventors that were into that. And the Fox Sisters lived in the area of Lilydale, upstate New York. For those who are not familiar with the Fox Sisters, they were three sisters. I have an article here that explains who they were. We have Leia, if I pronounce her name correctly, Margaret, and we also had Kate. The two younger sisters used wrappings to convince their much older sister and others that they were communicating with spirits. Their older sister then took charge of them and managed their careers for some time. They all enjoyed success as mediums for many years. In 1988, Margaret and Kate confessed that their wrappings had been a hoax. Publicly demonstrated their method, Margaret attempted to recant her confession the next year. But their reputation was ruined, and in less than 5 years, they were all dead. With Margaret and Kate dying in abject poverty, spiritualism continued as if the confessions of the Fox Sisters had never happened, which I think is kind of interesting. Does this have anything to do with the big mediumship that kind of exploded? What do you think, Tim? Do you think they really had a big hand in the beginning of the spiritual movement?
It might have been a catalyst for it. It might have been the bringing about of what it is. In other words, for somebody to take a look at it and put a name to it, and have something so they can take a closer look at what's going on. That'd be my best.
Yeah.
Yes.
No. I think like the talking board has always been around well before it was called the Ouija board. Back in the ancient Chinese culture, I had looked it up because I wanted to do a little bit of history on the Ouija board, and they've actually they had a name for it. It was like a really special name for it. I don't remember the name for it, but I think scrying was one of them. And the Chinese, what the moral of my point is, the ancient Chinese culture were one of the very first people to actually communicate with speaking with the dead. And I think the ancient Chinese culture probably expanded and branched out, you know, to other countries. And probably passed on to generation, and, you know, started to end up calling different things, and such as the Ouija board or the talking board and so forth. But you know, dowsing rods have been around for many, many years. That's been a method used for a really long time. I don't know. I think it's been around a lot longer than the Fox sisters, because I know it's got prominent history, especially attached and connected to Lilydale, which is a very popular place where mediums go to train. They have a lot of, I think, training up in that area to learn, you know, whatever they learn in mediumship, whatever you want to call it. I don't know. What do you think, Tim?
I think for the most part, the Ouija board that they call it now, I'm pretty sure that's, you know, I'm in the minority when I say I believe that's kind of over. It's been, you know, experiments, blindfold experiments. Different things have been done to show that I can't remember the exact name, but it's basically fine motor skills. Fine motor movement, that when you have a group of people together and you let them see the board, and they're believers in the board, and they're believers that somebody's going to talk to them, they'll get all kinds of really cool answers to the questions that they ask. But when you blindfold them and then have them do the Ouija board again, they don't get the answers. So, you know, the Ouija board's kind of never been really something great with me. I think it's kind of gone by the wayside for me. However, I do acknowledge there are a lot of people that have a lot of stories and a lot of faith and a lot of belief in it. But for me, I've kind of let that go to the wayside.
Yeah, no, me too. To prove that point even more, Tim, I have friends in Australia that I've worked with closely. They went to an event that they have that's big over there in Sydney, Australia, I believe, is where they held it. But they had an Ouija board convention, and you're talking like hundreds of people bringing a Ouija board in a supposed or alleged haunted location, and they all like sit down and you know, obviously they try to attempt to communicate with whatever that's there. And it was funny because my friend, and her name was Karen, Karen's like, you know, not one time did any of the boards do anything. And I'm like, well, in my brain was like, you know, that's because it's cardboard and plastic.
Cardboard and plastic. If you think about even today, and I understand the argument is that the board itself and the origins of the board comes from a long time ago, but I just don't understand if you think about it reasonably, you know, it's a toy company that makes it. I don't think that they have a patent to a portal to hell or a patent to communication with spirits or evil spirits. And if they did, and if that could be proven, I'm sure that they would be held at some point. They would be held liable for something that has happened from use of the Ouija board, you know, either a perceived loss of quality of life or loss of income or damage to, you know, psychological or emotional damage. I'm sure at some point, if there's some credibility for it, somebody would have tried to sue the toy company because they used their board to conjure an evil spirit into their house, and, you know, they thought that it was just a game.
Yeah. But me and you, Tim, have kind of the same views, but maybe like not same views, but like think kind of along the same page that the Ouija board and doing stuff like that is kind of like a negative thing, because there's so many factors that can trick your mind into many things. And, you know, like you said, like psychologically, it can, you know, manipulate, like, you know, your thoughts later on, like after using it and you're in a dark setting, you're watching a horror movie and, you know, every fart, creak and tick that you hear, like after watching the horror movie and you do a board and, you know, you think, oh no, I did the Ouija board. Did I conjure something up?
Yes, exactly. It's a very good example. You know, watching a scary movie and then going to bed and wishing you having or reading, you know, Stephen King at night, and you know, everything that creaks outside the door is a killer clown or an alien or a monster. Same way with a Ouija board. That's my belief anyway. I think once you get into it, and certainly if you already enter it believing it, I think you just leave your mind wide open for tricking yourself into thinking that you did something that you wish you wouldn't have, and it's too late. Afterwards, anything that will happen after you do the board would be easily attributable to your use of the board. So if something comes up missing and you could have swore you put it on the table and it's gone, you know, that's that ghost picking something up and hiding it from you again. Or if the door's open or a cabinet door's open in the kitchen and you could have swore you closed it, you know, it's the demon that you summoned that was going through your kitchen cabinets looking for a glass, or I guess a glass of water. You know, all the things will just come easily to confirm what you already believe.
Yeah, exactly. I like one of our friends and teammates that we work with. His name is Brian. He's very funny sometimes. And when we explain the Ouija board to people and we try to sway people from using it, you know, he's always like, it's bad. He's like, you know, you think you're talking to your grandmother, but it's demon grandma that you're talking to. So don't use it.
Demon grandmother. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the harm from the Ouija board that happened is from the belief that it's real. I don't discount that when people say they've used the Ouija board and bad things have happened. I believe that. I believe it. I believe it because they believe it. I don't think that the cause is of the Ouija board. I think the cause is of the belief in the Ouija board.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I just, again, I just want to mention to our listeners who just came on that we're having some really technical difficulties here. Our chat room keeps closing out on me. So if I lose you guys in the chat room, just please keep trying to log in and, you know, bear with us with that, because it's not human error this time. It's, I'm going to blame demons. So anyway, we have some really great topics. For those who are joining us late, we're talking about very first ghost encounters in history. We're talking about the beginning of the spiritual movement. And we got a little bit into the Fox sisters. You know, there's a museum up in Lilydale area. If you guys want to go check it out, it's upstate New York. Not sure how much of a drive it is, but I know a couple of friends of ours that are in the chat room, Carolyn and Kenny, have been there recently, which kind of inspired me to talk about the subjects tonight. So want to thank them for that. But but let's talk about the very first ghost encounters in history, Tim. Is there anything that you can recall in any research that you've done so far that has dated maybe some of the oldest encounters that you've ever read about? You know, like whether it be like maybe the old Western, you know, maybe like the White House, you know, like I'm talking like going way back, you know?
I like early on, and I wish I should get back into this because it does interest me, but I like to learn about what other cultures view ghosts as, or spirits, or spirits, or demons for that matter. I've always found that interesting because it is kind of across the board. It is kind of culturally across the board, and it seems to go back a long time. But there was a Japanese belief of an evil spirit, and I can't remember the name of it. I want to say it was like a jin, I believe is it. But that came from, you know, 1,000 years ago. But that interested me a whole lot.
Yeah, I believe. I don't know. I just keep getting booted out of this chat room, so I'm obviously not supposed to be in the chat room tonight.
there you go.
Anyway. Yeah, I think you have that correct. The jinn, I believe it's pronounced, not jinn or whatever that thing is. Totally like out of sync tonight. I want to apologize to our listeners because this Blog Talk Radio is really driving me crazy tonight. I'm just trying to keep on top of everything. But
I find it interesting that that culturally, across the board, across, you know, a distance of time, there's a lot of written history about it. Even if it's just a belief, even if it's not factual, the idea of it is interesting to me. And the idea of how different cultures identify and deal with what they believe to be spirits of the past or demons, I think that's fascinating to me too.
Yeah, I have a great article that's here, actually, that is courtesy of the History Channel. I looked it up this week, and it's really great. I'll post it in the chat room. I'm going to go ahead and read a couple things off of it, but hopefully I can even be allowed to post a link with the way things have been going tonight. All right, so here we go. As with other cultures, tales of spooky visitors from the grave abound throughout American history. Some famous anecdotes relate the sighting of dead shipmen, and another involves the portrait of a forgotten beauty. But many of the enduring ghost stories are about the famous men and women who have passed through the White House, with reports of Dolly Madison scaring Rose Garden workers, Andrew Jackson haunting in his bed in the Rose Room, and Abraham Lincoln's lingering presence. The White House may be home to more than the incumbent president and his family. So one of the stories here, I'll read this one because it's not too long. Portrait of Theodosia Burr. On December 31st in 1812, the beautiful and vivacious Theodosia Burr, wife of wealthy Governor Joseph Alston of South Carolina, left her husband's plantation and sailed north on the Patriot to visit her beloved father, the famous Aaron Burr, in New York City. In early January, the vessel was accosted off Cape Hatteras by ships of Great Britain, then at war with the United States, but was permitted to proceed on its journey. The Patriot was never seen again, nor with any certainty was Theodosia. An angry storm that very night swept the coast of North Carolina. Some say that during the gale, pirates boarded the Patriot, removed all valuables, forced passengers and crew to walk the plank, then sank the ship. But legend persists that Theodosia survived, that she was cast ashore in a small boat onto the Outer Banks, bereft of all possessions, except a portrait of herself, and that with her sanity completely gone. She was thereafter cared for by a banker, fisherman, and his wife. Then it goes on to say, the ghost of Abigail Adams has reportedly also been seen hurrying toward the East Room of the White House, which is where she used to hang her laundry. And then on to the rest of the story. The years went by. In 1869, the strange woman became ill, and a doctor from Elizabeth City was called in to attend her. He did what he could, but it was clear that she had not long to live. As he was leaving the sick room, the poor fisherman's wife told the doctor, as she had no money, he would have to choose something from the house for his pay. When he replied that he would like to have the handsome portrait hanging on the wall, then afflicted old woman sprang from her bed. It is mine. You shall not have it. I'm on my way to visit my father in New York, and I'm taking this picture of his darling Theodosia. With that, she grabbed the canvas, rushed through the door, ran down the surf, and walked into the ocean. The next day, the portrait was washed up on the beach. It is not fact, not legend, that the doctor took the picture from Nag's Head to his home in Elizabeth City, that a descendant sold it to an art dealer who then turned it in and sold it to a member of the Burr family, and that it exists today. That's a pretty cool story.
It is. You brought up that brings up a story that's really close to our place, which is the Greenbrier Ghost.
Cool.
I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No, not at all. This is the first that, you know, when I did my homework during the week, that I come across mm-hmm. this, you know, so I just thought it was really cool because it dates back to all the way of 1812. And we're talking about, you know, the first ghost encounters in American history. So 1812 is going back pretty far. And, you know, something that's pretty relevant to our topic tonight. So I'm glad that it it's personal to you because you said it was kind of close to your area. So that's cool.
Yeah. From the late 1800s. It has to do with a ghost that actually was allegedly testified or gave testimony to a living descendant or the mother. That she had been actually murdered and didn't die from an accidental fall. And it stands as one of the only court cases that accepted testimony from a ghost.
Wow, yeah. I mean, it's cool that, you know, I mean, there's a lot of, like, you know, ghost encounters and claims of many different types of experiences, you know, in modern times. But, you know, a lot of these things that they write about, you know, that dates back to the early 1800s. And, you know, I know there was folklore and stories, but storytelling back then, you know, but, you know, some of their eyewitnesses and the detail that they explain these things, it really makes you wonder, you know, did they really see the ghost of this person that was related to the painting? And I don't know, maybe there's something more to it, you know?
I would probably bet that there's a whole lot more to it.
So,
I would. And, but that's just me.
Yeah. Looking for some more articles here. There's quite a few of them. Let's see. Here's one that dates back to John and Abigail Adams, which I think is cool. All right, here's one. John and Abigail Adams. President John Adams and his wife Abigail were the first occupants of the White House. During Adams' presidency, 1797 to 1801, the Capitol moved from Philadelphia to Washington, a struggling hamlet built mostly in a swamp. Pennsylvania Avenue was unpaved, and frequent rains turned it into a quagmire, if I pronounced that word right. What, Tim?
No, I said, yeah, quagmire.
Mm-hmm. Quagmire, okay, I thought so. Although the White House itself was only half finished, Miss Adams cheerfully tolerated the noise and confusion of workmen coming and going. She was fond of pomp and ceremony as Martha Washington had been, and in spite of the inconveniences, held memorable receptions and dinner parties. Indeed, her invitations were highly coveted, but one immediate problem presented itself: where to hang the family wash. The White House was inadequately heated, and a number of rooms were cold and damp. Miss Adams finally decided that the East Room was the warmest and driest place in her August home, and that's where the clothesline was strong. The First Lady has never forgotten. The ghost of Abigail Adams is seen hurrying towards the East Room with arms outstretched as if she was carrying a load of laundry. She can be recognized by the cap and lace shawl she favored in life. So that's pretty cool.
Yes. When you get caught up, I have a really cool question. Just to talk about. When we were talking about spirituality, and I wonder which came first. Ghosts or religion?
I mean, you know, if you know, we're ghosts in the afterlife, and you know, there's, you know, the afterlife that we move on to. You know, we don't have definitive answers for that, but I would have to think, you know, because part of my belief is that, you know, there is something that's beyond this life, and maybe their ghosts have been around before religion. You know, I mean, why is it we don't see ghosts of cavemen or dinosaurs and you know, things from like ancient civilizations like Egyptian, you know, Egyptian gods, or you know, the ancient civilizations all over the world. What do they call them? I can't remember the name of them. The Samaritans, right? Is that how you say it? The
Americans.
Not Samoans. My wife is telling me Samoans. No.
That's like South Pacific.
Yeah. But I don't know.
The reason that I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, you know, because I would think it would have to be in existence before religion. I think religion was kind of created you know, after the whole, like, you know, Jesus Christ thing, and you know, I don't know. I don't want to like open up a can of worms
Jesus
here.
Christ,
you know what I mean?
Well, I think it's time to talk about. Yeah, as long as it's a very respectful discussion. So, like, why that question comes to my mind is, if there were ghosts before a thought of an afterlife, I would find that interesting. More so than if a religion came first, and then sightings of a ghost. Because I could almost see that logically happen. I I could see where why people would begin to think that what they saw was a spirit or a ghost of someone that they knew or were afraid of. They had religion first, or and not just any religion, but if they had a belief of an afterlife. But if they had seen ghosts or spirits that they believed, and because of the ghosts or spirits that they believed were of people that they knew, maybe that was a beginning of a religion. Maybe that's how they tried to understand why this person's still around, that there is an afterlife.
Yeah. I, you know, also, if I'm not mistaken, in you know, the Bible, well, many different forms of the Bible, they also say that, you know, Jesus Christ is supposed to come back in spirit, and, you know, he revisits the earth and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, so, but, you know, Kenny's right in the chat room, you know, by the way, you know, the religion always has been long before, you know, Jesus walked the earth and whatnot. So, you know, you've had civilizations that had all different kinds of religion. And I want to thank Carolyn for correcting me. The Sumerians is the name I was trying to think of. So I want to thank her for saying that. I was trying to spit it out, but it just wasn't coming out right.
Yeah, well, I think long before, you know, Christianity as we know what it is today, I mean, there were all kinds of religions. Even if you just go back a long time ago when people would just look at beliefs of spirituality and in nature, in consequences, like you would have like a person that they might worship would be like someone like Cocopelli, which would bring, you know, and I can't remember the culture that belongs to, but that was a belief, you know, that was a springtime person that they would look at. And that would bring good crops, that would bring fertile fertility to the village, and it would bring good music too. But that was a belief that they had, and I consider that a type of religion for them. But which came first? You know, did the belief that you would go to an afterlife and hang out with Cocopelli come because they had seen or encountered what they believed was a spirit?
Right. So, I mean, I, you know, in some of our beliefs in the paranormal community, you know, a lot of people debate and argue that there are spirits all over the world, and, you know, that when we pass on, that our spirit passes on to a different life. So I would have to say that, you know, there's got to be something out there. So, well, like, where does our soul go? Like, does it just stop? Like, that's the whole question that I have. You know, what happens when it's it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Who knows? Yeah.
Yeah, but I want to apologize for our show tonight. I think it's kind of a disaster. I mean, Tim is echoing.
I got to tell you, the delay. Yeah, I can hear myself 5 seconds after I speak, and so it's making me want to. I have like this. I feel like I want to slur my words because. And I also talk in chunks because I talk and then I let the echo catch up. It messes with me.
Yeah, I think it's just messing with us in general. As it said, we've been on a roll. We've been on a roll, yeah, so it's time for it to mess with us.
Yeah. But you know, yeah. We struggle through it, we get through it.
Yeah, that's all. You know, not every show is going to be perfect, and God only knows we're not perfect human beings, and you know the software is man-made and it's not going to be perfect, so it's going to have its glitches from time to time. And, you know, not everything is going to be, you know, what we expect. So just want to thank our listeners for, you know, being patient. And, you know, that thanks a lot for tuning in tonight and making it all the worthwhile. You know, thanks to Carolyn and Kenny for joining us in the chat room, even though they're the only two people joining us tonight. But I don't know.
I think we've chased off everybody else.
Yeah, right. This is probably like our worst show ever. But I'm just gonna make the best of it. So hey, at least again, you know, like that other article, at least, you know, I can admit that.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's part of the growing process. So we push forward.
That's it. Oh, I have a really cool article that I have here while I'm reading articles. And I think this is really interesting. This could have sparked the idea of the spirit box. I have
somebody needed money.
No, this goes way before Frank Sumption. This dates back to the early 1920s. This article is entitled Edison's Forgotten Invention, A Phone That Calls the Dead. So Thomas Edison had an interest in, you know, paranormal, if you want to call that back then. What better time than Halloween to explore the mystery around Edison's most ghoulish invention? In 1920, Americans were still reeling from the horrific casualties of World War I. Meanwhile, spiritualism, Ouija boards, and the slew of new technological inventions from men like Thomas Edison were capturing the national zeitgeist. Do I say that right? or zeitgeist, if I don't know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tongue-tied word. All these converged when Edison told American Magazine that he was working on a device known as a spirit phone. Uh-huh. In other words, a phone that would let the living communicate with the dead. The result was a national craze. Most of the major newspapers and magazines in the country leaped to cover this astounding new invention. And the magazine that broke the story received over 600 letters to the editor from people obsessed with this device. These letters ranged from offers of help with the design to claims that such a machine already existed. And at least one gentleman wrote to ask how he could place a call once he reached the afterlife, since he expected to die shortly. That's pretty funny. Why was Edison's mere mention of the spirit phone such a national sensation? There are a few reasons. By 1920, Edison was a national hero. Newspaper and magazine reporters often stopped by his house to chat as a part of their normal beat. Radio had recently gotten huge, and the idea of the information traveling wirelessly through space and time, based on technology you couldn't see or touch, was something that until then was impossible. If you could hear live humans talk through a box, why not dead ones? Plus, Edison, who founded GE, had invented the phonograph and thus already performed the miracle of bringing the voices of dead souls to the living. In our world today, one needs only to watch an old movie or the History Channel to hear a dead person speak, says Gerald Fabry from the Museum Curator of Sound Recordings at the Thomas Edison National Historical Park. To hear speech that originated from the mouth of the deceased person was an amazing event. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's kind of cool, I think. So he was Zach Gagan's course. Back.
Yeah. But further along in the article, I mean, it's pretty long. You know, if I read it, it'd probably take up the whole show. But yeah, no, Kenny's right. It basically never really actually invented a machine, but he had made a joke to an interviewer, and they, I don't know, I guess Edison wasn't really a good person.
Well, he's the one that went around telling him.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, he's not a.
I don't know, we're getting kind of close to the end of the show. At the end of the show, I like to make our announcements. We had to postpone our Knights of the Round Table episode that was coming up. Not everybody could make that date. So we're going to push that ahead, I think, maybe till either the end of August or maybe beginning of September. We'll see what happens with that. But maybe in a future episode, me and Kenny are going to talk about the Kinect. You know, we're working on a project together that's going to kind of go over the flaws of the Kinect and the things that people are being mistaken for something paranormal when it's not. And I can't wait to work on that with him. And I have some testing that I did out in the field that on investigations that we recently did. And Bill Hyland introduced me to the Kinect originally. You know, I volunteered to participate in testing, you know, the equipment. Seemed like an interesting piece of equipment to try out. Fortunately, it has a lot of flaws and it locks onto objects that will kind of make things look like it's going to be a figure, but a lot of these figures that it picks up, unfortunately, never like walk across a room. You don't see it like running in front of the frame of the camera. They're always stationary. And, you know, when I first started noticing this about the Kinect, I thought to myself, maybe the sensors that's built within the device are just so sensitive that whatever object that it locks onto is just going to try to make out it to be like a figure, you know, like whether it be like a cardboard box or a pole in the room or, you know, whatever objects that are in front of the device, it's going to manipulate it into thinking it's a figure, you know, because that's what it's designed to do. It's designed to map out whatever bounces back into the software and reads, you know, whatever it does to build that image. And unfortunately, a lot of the flaws, you know, that's a big flaw. So in my opinion, I don't think the Kinect is a good device to use. Unfortunately.
No, Bill's a very smart person. He's good. I have a lot of respect for Bill.
Yep. Everybody hears my wife cooking a microwave in the background.
I figured that's a blog talk person supposed to be taking care of it.
It's my fish. My dinner's cooking. I'm hungry. Oh, vegetables, she said. All right. But I don't know. I think we pretty much covered our topics tonight. They're pretty cool articles. I thought they were pretty fun. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, I agree. I just talking with that delay in the background is really messing with me, so I didn't do a whole lot of talking tonight.
Yeah, I know. So, well, what can you do? Yeah, what can you do? You got to work with what you got. And, you know, we got trouble tonight. I just want to thank everybody for not, like, blasting us with negative comments. And, you know, not every show is going to be a good show. And, I don't know, we just got to keep trekking along. And, you know, just want to thank everybody who did tune in tonight. And I don't know. I'm sure we'll think of some great topics for our next episode. I think we're going to end our episode a little early tonight because Tim can't stand listening to his delay in the background. Anyway,
it's a strange cognitive experience.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds like, you know what it reminds me of? Like when you're in a pool and you're trying to talk underwater.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it reminds me of.
Oh, it's very strange.
Oh yeah. Anyway, good night, everybody. Good night, Kenny. Well, Kenny, I'll be meeting with you in a few minutes on Skype. Hopefully Skype will be good to be kind to me tonight. Because, I don't know, it didn't work out for a blog talk. But Carolyn, thanks again for stopping by and listening. And I want everybody to have a great night. See you guys next time.
Thank you for tuning in to Paranormal Talk Radio. We broadcast live every Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Don't be intimidated by the host. We would love to get your feedback about our show, whether it is good or bad. You can leave comments on our Blog Talk webpage or email us privately at paranormaltalkradio@gmail.com. Would you like to interact with other listeners or the host during the show? Register free with Blog Talk Radio to chat with us live during the show. You can also look us up on Facebook, answer questions and polls, and get the latest news. Until next time, see you on the other side.